Hi, this is David Wilk for Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. And today I'm talking to Richard Curtis, who is both a literary agent and an ebook entrepreneur. Hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm fine, and nobody else can make that statement.
I think that's probably true. Well, maybe you could talk a little bit about your history in the book business. I know you've been doing this for a long time, so you might have to summarize a little bit.
Right. Well, I've been an agent for quite a number of years, going back to the Han Dynasty, I believe. I've been working in this field for many decades, and we are a very successful agency. If we specialize in anything, it's probably genre fiction. We're well known for fantasy and science fiction, romance, and thrillers. But because of my interest in science fiction and science in general and the future, back in the 80s, I began writing a column in a science fiction publication, telling authors how to understand their contracts, how to understand the publishing process, and anything that I thought might be of interest to authors developing in the future. And one of these was what we now call ebooks, but in the late 80s and early 90s, what we were looking at was CD-ROMs and other ways of digitally storing information. And as soon as I saw my first CD-ROM in the probably like 89 or 90, I immediately understood that a day would come when you would be able to play a book in a box. I think that's the crudest way that I could put it. I thought that maybe what it would look like is you would insert a disc into a light box, essentially, and read a book that way. I did not anticipate that the way we would be getting our content would be the internet. But when that began to develop in the 90s, I then waited for an ebook to come along. And in 1998, I think it was, the first viable ebook was introduced, the Rocket Book. And I decided that rather than handle ebooks as a literary agent and just sell rights to ebooks, which is the position that every other agent is in right now, I decided that I wanted to be more of a player in the field, and so I decided to start an ebook publishing company called eReads, and we incorporated in the year 2000, and we have been there ever since. We are a leading independent ebook publishing company. At the time of this conversation, I would say we have about 1,000 books in the program. Almost all of them are previously published out-of-print books, which we decided is the niche that we would be very comfortable in. We're not really competitive with the Random House or Penguin to acquire new books by front list authors, but we make a very good living from reissuing out-of-print books that have reverted to the author.
And when you publish books as e-reads, what do you publish in all formats? I mean, do you start with a Word, an electronic document, a Word document?
Let me answer that in two parts. What we acquire is the right to publish the book in electronic format in any of any kind, whether it be Adobe or you name it, Kindle, Nook. Our books are in all of those formats. But we also publish it in paperback in the form of print on demand. Those books are sold through Amazon and eventually will be sold in other outlets. So you can actually buy a physical book if you would like to. The way we produce books is that we prefer to scan the originally published book. And the reason for that is that those books have been copy edited. If you email me the Word document of a book that you had published 15 years ago, it will not have the formatting, editing process, the typographical, grammatical fixes that your editor made. So we prefer to use the final finished book that went out to the public. We scan it. We then proofread the scan, or ask the author to proofread the scan.
Right, which you probably then have to do some corrections to.
Yeah, you know, we do. And then we have to format it for the various ebook formats, and also format it for print. We design our own covers in-house using clip art. We have a brilliant production manager who also doubles as a book jacket designer, and that is also a savings to us because we don't have to acquire art. So once the books are formatted and the covers are created, we then pour them into these various formats. We press the button and they show up on various websites, and it's time to send us money. Our deal with authors is that we split all net monies 50-50, because we are on a profit-sharing arrangement. We previously agree with the author on a production fee that is used to defray our expenses. And once that production expense has been earned out, then we, then the author begins receiving royalties, as I say, on a 50-50 basis.
Right. So you've taken this progressive step, probably long ago, ahead of the industry in a sense, because obviously in the old days, or in the current days, for most print books, the royalty rates are much lower, and even as electronic editions, digital publishing is changing the economics for authors and publishers. I think you're probably in a fairly advanced position in terms of being author-friendly.
Well, we're author-friendly because my original literary agent position, as well as the author advocacy writings that I've done, all when I started an ebook company, I felt that I wanted the model to be what I, as an agent, would want the model to be. So the two are kind of consonant with each other.
And how do you, and this sort of gets to a really interesting point, as in the digital world, I mean, there are lots of discussions now. I think, the news, as we are talking, a lot of the news has been about Macmillan and Amazon and Apple. And there's a lot of discussion, I think, in author among authors about what's going on. There's discussions among publishers. I'm sure there are discussions among retailers. Everyone in the book business is trying to figure out what new models will emerge and how they will be able to survive economically. I'm interested in your opinion of not just what you do as an ebook publisher, but how will this evolve over the next few years in terms of the business model for publishers and authors overall?
Well, First of all, my own vision from the very beginning was what I call the virtual publishing company, which is, it's easier to be virtual when a publisher is not dealing directly with authors, literary agents, because our stock in trade is previously published books. There's not a lot of author relationships, relations. We don't have to worry about authors, cartons of books, returns. Everything we do is outsourced. When I say a virtual publishing company, I mean that ideally a publishing company should simply be a server under somebody's desk through which all the transactions pass. Obviously, that's impossible, but it's the ideal. The big publishers, the Random Houses and the Penguins and Simon & Schuster's and the Harper's, have legacies that are very difficult, that make it very difficult for them to navigate through this new world. They have sales representatives that have to be paid commissions. They have a real estate in the form of office buildings that they own or lease. They have editorial staffs. They have printing presses. They have warehouses. These are all physical drags on their ability to move quickly and efficiently, whereas for an ebook company, at least one like mine that specializes in previously published books, I figure our expense is about $1,000 to produce a book, and thereafter everything else pretty much runs smoothly, because we're not burdened by the same legacy issues that the big publishers do.
Right, and of course the bigger publisher will be bringing out previously issued books where the editorial work has essentially already been done.
Right.
Well, now let's say you're not a reprint publisher or a startup who hasn't done this before, and let's say you are a legacy publisher, whether you're a big one or even a medium-sized one, what do you think, do you think that their model can benefit from some of the lessons that your model offers, or do they have a completely different, essentially a completely different path that they have to follow, and how do you think that will evolve? I guess what I'm trying to get at is, if you were, you do represent authors, so when you talk to a publisher today, and let's say you are talking to a commercial publisher about a book that you want to sell them, what do you expect in terms of a royalty on a digital edition?
Well, the first thing is publishers are very smart people. And although they were oblivious from around 1998 when the ebook was first introduced until about 2 or 3 years ago when they began to notice that ebook revenues were advancing at a 300% clip every year. They finally woke up. But once they woke up, they got savvy very, very quickly. And they are beginning to move much more quickly on their feet, so that they for instance can issue an ebook simultaneously with a hardcover if they feel that it's desirable or timely to do so. In some cases, they've acquired a book and published it first as an ebook because of the timeliness and relevance of a book that may be out of print. That may be out of date, by delaying a couple of months. So they've learned very, very quickly. The problem that I see going forward for the big publishers is that they really do not have adequate ways in which to directly sell to the public. And that's a very big disadvantage. You have Amazon, which is a brilliant and ingenious retailing machine. And it would be fine if it remained a retailing machine. But lately, Amazon has begun acquiring content like a publisher. They are beginning to become a publisher. So that you have Amazon, a retailer that is also a publisher. You have Barnes & Noble, that is a retailer that is also a publisher. That gives them enormous advantage over a publisher that is simply a publisher and not a retailer.
Yeah, I think that's an important point that it may emerge. I mean, I think it's a trend of conversation and a business reality that all of the retailers are easily able to take on the elements of their suppliers the offerings that their suppliers, and they also have an advantage because they have the direct contact with the consumer, and they aggregate through being a retailer, they aggregate all different types of products so that they can really understand the patterns and interests and desires of consumers.
Right, but publishers are in a position to do that, but they're afraid to. The reason they're afraid to, that is to say they're afraid to offer, let's say a Random House might be afraid to offer books directly to the public on a large scale, is because they're afraid that Amazon or Barnes & Noble would punish them, would basically say, you're treading on our turf. You remain a publisher, and we'll do the retailing, and don't step on our territory, because there could be sanctions against you if you do that. So the publisher is at a disadvantage. It can't retail as aggressively as it would like to. And so one of the predictions I made at the end of 2009, everybody was invited to predict this and predict that, I predicted that we would see a merger or an acquisition between a big retailer and a publishing company. The retailer would like the publishing company's content, and the publisher, of course, would like to be able to reach into the retail market and sell its products as efficiently as possible.
Well, do you think, though, for publishers, I've thought about this a lot. I think that publishers really do have to figure out how to talk to consumers. They are, you know, to use the famous word from the previous internet bubble, they're disintermediated from their consumers, and there are lots of issues that arise from that. And of course, as you said, they would be treading on their own customer's turf, the customer being a retailer, by selling direct to consumer. But the other impediment for a lot of publishers is if you are not a specialized publisher, if you're not a verticalized publisher where you have an identifiable community, where you are part of a community and actually can talk with consumers in a meaningful way, that you really are at a disadvantage. For example, you know, I would think that a science fiction and fantasy publisher like Tor or Bain, active in its community, completely entwined with the interests of the readers, would do very well going direct to direct to consumer, whereas an undifferentiated publisher that's, let's say, publishing broadly in a number of general trade categories would have a much more difficult time, for the obvious reasons that they don't have an ability to really both meet and understand all of those customers' needs the way a retailer can.
I absolutely agree with that. One of our famous futuristic gurus by the name of Mike Shatskin, I don't know whether you've interviewed him, but if you haven't, I hope you will.
Oh, I will, definitely.
he has strongly predicted that as we go forward, publishing will become more and more a matter of reaching niches. And even if you're a general publisher, simply a HarperCollins that publishes books in all sorts of fields, that thanks to the computer, to the internet, to Google, and to just the very nature of digital information, that even a general publisher will be able to reach into niches that they were never able to do before. An example I think that Shatskin used was somebody, just a general publisher, publishing a book about a Civil War battle. Before, you would simply print 10 or 20,000 copies, put them out there, and hope that people, hoped you'd find an audience. But now you are able to take that Civil War battle book and find out who is interested in war books, who is a Civil War buff, who is a uniform buff, who is a weapons buff, who is a strategy and tactics buff. And I'm sure I've left out half a dozen other niches that would be of interest if you knew how to reach those people. Well, now you'd know how to reach them. And you can do it cheaply and virally by simply learning where the websites and the interest groups and the communities are for people who love uniforms, and tell them that there's a book in there that has a lot of information that's never been done before about Civil War uniforms. So I think we are heading for a time when even a general publisher will be able to reach audiences that they never were able to, because they're able to do market research and market penetration in a way that never could be done even 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, let me ask you one more question. This sort of goes maybe to the science fiction experience that you have. I know that quite a number of kind of imaginative science fiction writers have thought about, and some have even done, versions of books utilizing digital technology and maybe collaborators from other disciplines to create new forms of writing. I don't even, maybe we have to even stop thinking of the term book in some cases.
Well, you have to stop thinking about the term author, too, because only a few years ago we all knew what an author was. It was somebody who sat down in front of something called a typewriter with paper, and when he had a pile of paper and typed the end, it was called a book, and he or she sent it into the publisher. But now that same author sitting in front of a screen with a keyboard can create an audio, a video, all sorts of hot links.
And also collaborate with the reader.
Collaborate with the reader, can create animation, can basically become the auteur of his or her own movie. Is that called a book? And if it isn't called a book, what do you call the author who can do that, who's closer to a film producer than a writer of words on paper?
Right. And in fact, I think that this is maybe potentially an emerging area partially because, in fact, all of the tools that go along with creativity, not just writing with word processors and different forms of display, but also if you want to work with film or if you want to work with video cameras, mapping, all of the technology can be at your fingertips now, so that the younger kids coming up today have skill sets that were simply unimaginable years ago.
Right, and still, There is nothing like immersing yourself in a good old book printed on paper with no distractions, no screen, no color, no moving pictures, no music, no interactivity, simply the reader, the book. I believe that it will endure, even though we're infatuated right now with screen technology. In the long run, it will be you, your book, and your imagination.
Well, I think that's actually a pretty good place for us to finish, and it's almost a poetic moment to close this interview with. Thanks so much, Richard. This is David Wilk for Publishing Talks. I've been talking to Richard Curtis, who is an agent and a publisher. And thank you so much, Richard. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, David.